Welcome to the Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast. On the line with me is Dr. Jill Vecchio. You know her. She was one of the few people in America that read the Complete and Affordable Care Act, also known as the PPACA, as well as Obamacare. Dr. Jill Vecchio, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
So today, the World Health Organization, or also known as WHO, has been in the news lately. Trump recently announced that he's going to stop the U.S. from funding the World Health Organization, while his administration is reviewing the World Health Organization's mismanaging of the coronavirus. And he said that the U.S. contributes up to $400 million, while superpowers like China, where the outbreak began, contribute closer to $40 million. And so, Jill, you decided to take a closer look at the World Health Organization. What have you found out?
Well, thanks, Kim. I've been looking at the World Health Organization, or I'm going to call them WHO. So I've been looking at them for years, just because as a medical person, the WHO actually impacts our healthcare system more than people realize. So I wanted to go back a little bit, just a brief history of the WHO, and then kind of jump forward about 50 years and show people how their daily lives are being impacted by the WHO. So okay. WHO started as a program of the United Nations, and they tried to start something similar to the WHO after World War I, when they formed the League of Nations, but then League of Nations fell apart. So then after World War II, it was United Nations, and then WHO was an integral part of that formation in 1948. And they did good stuff. I mean, they did smallpox vaccines, polio, helped to eliminate smallpox virtually, polio virtually eliminated. I mean, that's huge stuff. That's really good stuff. Great work on malaria, clean water supplies, vaccines when vaccines, you know, were, in my opinion, more trustworthy. So they did really, really great work. Now, then naturally, as with any organization that gets increasing amounts of money, increasing bureaucracy, it also got increased corruption. Then in 2000, 2001, we had that WHO study that claimed that the United States ranked 37th in the world in healthcare. And I'm just going to say again, because it can't be stated enough, what a rotten study this was. It was so poorly done that the primary researchers that collected the data, it's not that the data was improperly collected, it was how the data was interpreted and what the criteria were that determined someone's position in healthcare quality. So their criteria, or let me say that the primary researchers who collected the data ended up discounting the study that was published because they disagreed with how the data was manipulated, how it was presented, and said it was not accurately presented. And they did not agree with the conclusions of the published study.
So, Jill, what you're saying, yeah, so the researchers said that they felt that they had been honest on their research, but then that data then was massaged to get to manipulated to get to a certain narrative, right?
Right, a certain conclusion that agreed with an agenda, and the agenda being universal worldwide, universal health care. Like every country having universal health care. So the WHO study, their criteria was how equal is a health care system across the population of a country. So it was all about equality, which means if you want everything to be equal, we've said this many times, by definition, you have to go to the lowest common denominator, mm-hmm. which means that the actual quality of the health care, is going to be lower if equality is your goal. So you can't have, it's not reasonable to think that you can have both and have universal health care. I mean, that would be, nobody could pay for that, right?
But Jill,
so that's why,
I don't.
That's why the United States ranked low. And I mean, there are papers written. I did a bunch of commentary on it. I've spoken about it. I mean, you could give a 2-hour talk easily dissecting this horribly this horrible study, and this is what the WHO does, right? They now have an agenda. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I think anybody that really cares about people would say, instead of trying to make everything equal in their misery, bringing everybody down, as you said, to the lowest common denominator so everybody is equal, it seems like we would want to be working to improve quality for people instead of this equality thing. So explain why there is such a difference, why people would look at that differently.
Why they want equality? Oh, well, it's the same people that think that healthcare is a human right. Now, so the United States ranked poorly, not because people can't get health care. Not because there are people in our country who can't get health care, because I'm telling you, that ain't the case. They can get health care. I do it every day, you know, seeing patients that we know we're never going to get paid to see. We're losing money seeing patients. Every Medicaid patient we lose money on, but we see them anyway. So that's not the problem. The reason we rank low is because everybody has access to pretty darn good health care in the United States. Better, and our base, our worst health care is far superior to almost every other country in the world. Their base, their main health care, right? So our worst health care is better than most countries' good health care, their okay. mean health care, their equal health care level, right? But because we have access to private health insurance and people can pay for elective surgeries, then that means that we're more unequal and therefore we ranked lower in their system for this study. So, I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous, but think about what that did. So the WHO wants everybody to have universal health care. They put that as the gold standard, is universal health care in some country. So if they rank the U.S. low, what did we end up with? Obamacare. Okay?
Interesting.
So,
you know, and it
right.
seems, so you said because that happened
the WHO
in...
WHO study. Sorry.
Well, you said that happened in early 2000. And, Jill, yes. I really think that these agendas of pushing for universal health care or, you know, many of these other things that we see out there, they are taking the long view on it, the long, you know, kind of a patient just plodding along. They continue to just hit that drumbeat. I mean, we're seeing here in Colorado this movement down at the state legislature to ultimately is moving us towards universal health care. So this happens early in 2000, 2001, it's 8 or 9 years later where we end up having Obamacare. So it's a patient movement towards trying to get us into these programs, Jill.
Well, and you think about 2000, 2001, who was in office? It was George W. Bush. So they couldn't really do anything for 8 years, right? But the second they got the chance, the second Obama was in office, what did they do? Healthcare. What did they base it on? WHO study.
Wow.
And Obamacare was written in such a way to collapse the system, which it's done, and open the door for, what do we have? Medicare for all. So wow. it really, I mean, they took the first opportunity to do this, and they spent that 8 years drawing up the legislation and making the plan to do it. It was brilliant. Brilliant. Brilliantly executed. Rotten plan, brilliantly executed. All from the WHO. Okay, so I'll talk just so you can kind of keep this, so folks can keep it in the back of their mind. I looked at the figures on the WHO website for contributions. So every country that is a member of the UN is supposed to contribute something, most of them. If they're really poor nations, then no. But they're assessed a certain contribution based on population and wealth, which is okay. kind of funny, because China, with 1.4 billion people, only pays like a third to a fourth or even a tenth of what the United States is assessed, which is weird. So mm-hmm. how they figure this is highly I mean, anyway, China has a lot of money. So, so the United States paid in 2016, 2017 were the numbers we had. So the United States paid in somewhere around somewhere around 300 million then. And then I also had found numbers that in 2017, the U.S. paid $400 million. Far more. I mean, like at least 4 to 10 times more than any other developed country, wealthy developed country, right? 4 to 10 times more.
And Jill, just another point to make on this, though. You said on the world, on WHO, on their website, the most recent numbers on contributions is 2016. That's 3 years ago. Honestly, you can't keep that stuff updated?
Exactly. This is their website. Yeah. So, and then countries have the option of voluntarily giving more, which obviously very few do. A few do. Like Sweden and the UK give more, but the UK gives very, very little. They're assessed very little. Okay, so the overall budget in 2016-2017 for the WHO was $3.7 billion. $3.7 billion. Now, the WHO officials are known for flying business class and first class where they go. They've been known to stay at $1,000 a night hotels in Africa. And I tell you what, the hotels in Africa aren't that expensive. So, $1,000 a night hotels flying around. So they're living large. There's noted corruption, and we'll get into some of that. But $3.7 billion in 2016, 2017, between the United States government, and then they add on, because they take a lot of private, most of their funding is private funding. So really the governmental funding, I think, only accounts for, I have it somewhere, one-fourth of their budget is governments. Three-fourths of their budgets is private funding. So coming from the United States of America, the money coming from the U.S. government, private miscellaneous private donors, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation gave something like $650 to $700 million, to the WHO 2016-2017. So if you count the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the U.S. public-private money, that accounts for 32% of the entire budget of the WHO. 32%. Yeah, what did we see them do? Protect China. So, this is pretty fascinating. The UK is the next highest, and they're they're just like a fourth or less of what they're probably more like a fifth or a sixth of what U.S. donors give to the WHO. So it's amazing and we're the one place that is not universal health care. The one place they're trying to turn into universal health care, we give by far the most money, partially because we're not universal health care. So it's craziness.
So the question is why? So President Trump has said that we're taking a pause on the U.S. government funding the WHO because of their mismanagement of the coronavirus pandemic, and really they're misreporting. They're trusting China's narrative instead of really searching for truth on this. If we as Americans, the government, private entities, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation give 32% or to contribute 32% to the budget, why on earth is the WHO so beholden to China?
And it's interesting, isn't it? So the corruption goes deep. Now the now Director General Tedros, so you've seen pictures of him. He's from Ethiopia. He is the first Director General of WHO that is not a physician. He was a microbiologist by training. In Ethiopia, he was part of a as many of the leaders in Africa are, or the most recent ones were, they were kind of freedom fighters, right? So he was among the freedom fighting group, and there was some accusations of crimes against humanity, and there always is in those revolutionary fights. When he was in Ethiopia after their independence, he became one of his positions was a health minister. Reportedly, Ethiopia had three separate cholera epidemics, cholera outbreaks, and cholera is an absolutely horrible, horrible death. It's vomiting and profuse diarrhea. People die of dehydration within hours. It's just awful. When he was health minister in Ethiopia, he managed to cover up, didn't let the world know that there was a cholera epidemic in Ethiopia. So he's had experience with cover-ups. He's mm-hmm. well-versed in cover-ups. So he was kind of held accountable for that briefly, but then they claimed that it was just, you know, that no, it's all a lie, but there is other evidence that it was true. So now he's been director general for WHO 2017, five-year term, so he'll be out in 2022. He needs to go out now. He needs to be gone now, and we need a new leader for the WHO. But Tedros is very chummy with Xi Ping Li. Is that right? Xi Ping Li. Yeah, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm not good with Chinese names. I apologize if I'm doing it wrong. So anyway, they're pretty tight. And China has a thing called, and you know, folks, I'm starting to check into the whole China stuff. It was like after 9/11, I wanted to learn about Islam. So now I'm trying to figure out all the China stuff. And it's amazing. It's frightening. It's incredible what China has done. It's absolutely brilliant what they've done. But they have their fingers economically, financially, in every country in the continent of Africa except for four. They're doing infrastructure projects. They're loaning them money. They are relieving debt. Like some of these poor countries in Africa owe China money, and China says, "No, you know what? We're gonna ignore that debt." But they never say. You never find out what they got in return for that. Many, many countries in Africa have corrupt leaders, and many, many countries in Africa have amazing resources. So they have like diamonds, gold, copper, silver. My husband and I went on an African safari and went around to like four countries in southern Africa. And it's amazing, you know, how different the economic systems and governmental systems are, how some states, you really see how the economic system and the level of tyranny directly influences the economic conditions in these countries. It's amazing. So,
Jill, just a point on the resources. It's over in a little different industry, but our car batteries, our batteries for our phones, all of these batteries have some rare earth minerals in them that Africa is the place where we get them. So I also have to question this movement to try to move Americans by basically force and coercion using public policy to move people to electric vehicles, when in essence that would make our transportation for everyday hardworking people more dependent on China. So I just wanted to connect that dot as well.
Yeah, and in China, it's absolutely brilliant how they're kind of, so in other words, they've ingratiated themselves to a great many of these countries. And let's face it, with the number of, there are very few countries that do not have some kind of, that do not have a corrupt government in place. Botswana is one of them, and that may even be changing. But for instance, Zimbabwe, Mugabe, Robert Mugabe was, again, a revolutionary fighter, came into power. He was great at first. Everybody loved him. He did good stuff. And then the total power corrupts, you know, complete power corrupts completely, and he went down that road, and crimes against humanity, blah, blah, blah. Tedros, the current director general of WHO, tried to appoint him goodwill ambassador to the WHO. And this Mugabe guy is a really bad guy. And he finally, they finally ousted him in a coup. His own party got rid of him when he was 93 years old and refused to leave office. It's like craziness. And he was appointed goodwill ambassador by Tedros. So what does that tell you? You know, it's kind of like the corrupt just hang together. How this Tedros even got in there is beyond me. So it's the WHO, same as the UN. It's corrupt from the top down. And yet we're spending about Americans and our, well, our government, our taxpayer money is paying for the WHO to try to ruin our healthcare system. Tedros says his number one priority in the World Health Organization, doesn't have anything to do with disease, is to instill universal healthcare everywhere. That's his listed number one priority as Director General of WHO. Everybody gets universal healthcare. And what business is that of his? It's not his business. His business is to fight disease wherever it is. Don't tell me how to run my country.
Wow.
So that's kind of where we are with this Tedros character. I mean, he's just a, what do you call him, a tin pot dictator kind of guy? Right. So, and molybdenum, there are a lot of rare earth. I mean, Africa really has a ton of resources. And let's face it, the Asians have a real affinity for parts of exotic animals. The rhinoceros horn, right? There's something about lions, tigers, and bears. Oh, no. But the lions and tigers, all these, but exotic animals, the Asians have an affinity for exotic animals. And the aphrodisiac market is huge there. I mean, it's like remarkable. Like, okay.
And you saw that when you were there then, huh, Jill?
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, they have very few places in, at least in Southern Africa, where you can see a rhinoceros in the wild. We went to one black rhinoceros park. It was a park outside of Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe that was only for black rhinos. And they said, okay, so it's only for black rhinos, but can't guarantee you're even going to see one in driving around for 4 hours. We can't guarantee you're going to see one. We ended up seeing seven. It was amazing. But they have a park just for black rhinos, and that was the only time we were ever going to be able to see a rhinoceros in the parks that we went to. And we went to some big popular parks. And amazing. And no rhinos. They have separate parks for white rhinos. I mean, it's wild.
Sounds like segregation.
That's what the rhinoceros horn aphrodisiac market from Asia has done. Is in addition, I mean, but they poach them for their horns. So now what they're doing in these parks, this is how big the problem is with the rhinoceros horn for aphrodisiacs. In Asia, when the rhinos are captured and moved to these preserves, they shave off part of their horn so that it's not the great big huge spiky horn. It's a little stub. So they shave off the horn, and they do the same thing with elephant tusks. A lot of times they'll take some of it off so that they won't be poached for the ivory, because there's not much ivory there. It's not worth it.
Interesting.
So, I mean, that's what they're doing. Yeah.
Now, a question. I'm not sure if you know, here in Colorado, before the Colorado legislature went into temporary adjournment, there was a piece of legislation that was going to dictate the square footage that egg-laying hens would have here in Colorado. Now, it seems to me that instead of PETA and these animal rights activists working on something like that, they really could have their work cut out for them over in Africa and really take a stand to protect animals. So just my editorial comment on that, Jill.
Yes, the poaching is still such a problem, but the places we went had armed guards, I mean literally armed guards with big guns all over the place for poachers. You had to sign in and all that stuff. So, but it's such a huge problem. So China has weaseled its way into, but they're doing some really good stuff in a lot of these countries, but there's always a price to pay. So the World Health Organization, the United Nations, and the countries, the member countries, almost every one of them has some beholding relationship with China. That's why China is so powerful. And granted, it may, I'm not saying the U.S. absolutely too. Business companies, even elected officials don't want to irritate China. Did you know Mitch McConnell's father-in-law is some muckety-muck in China? He married a Chinese national.
I didn't realize that.
Well, actually, and the father is chummy with CCP members, the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, Mitch McConnell's wife is Elaine Chao, I think it is, and you know she's Secretary of Transportation.
Oh, that's right. So I don't know but that was interesting. And then we got Joe Biden running for president, whose son has this relationship with this fund in China, getting a $1.5 billion hedge fund or something in China. He's getting millions of dollars from China. And there's this one gentleman, Brigadier General Robert Spalding, that was saying, you know what, if I had either Mitch McConnell's position or Joe Biden's position with his son, I wouldn't be able to get military clearance. I wouldn't be able to get classified clearance to do my job on the NSA. And I could even get court-martialed for having those relationships. And that's amazing that we've got these people running our country with relationships that would keep a regular military guy from getting top secret clearance.
And the reason would be because of their relative's position or connection with China. Is that what you're saying?
Right, yes.
Okay. Right. Interesting.
Well, I can tell you that at one point I was being considered for a position at Health and Human Services. And they told me when I, talked to them, did an initial interview to find out about the position and kind of say hello. They said, you'll have to divest yourself of any investments you have in blah, 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 blah. And that was just for like a totally mid-level position in the Department of Health and Human Services. Yet Joe Biden's son... And we have congressmen that are invested like this. What's that about? The corruption in our own government, when you really think about how our own government officials are compromised in their judgment and their ability to fulfill their oath to the Constitution, like they need to do that anyway, but their oath to the Constitution when they've got these compromising relationships all over the world. That's ridiculous. Why is this okay?
But President Trump, on the campaign trail, even talked about his concern with China, his concern that we have moved so much of our manufacturing over there. And people didn't really pay attention. But now with this COVID-19 Wuhan virus thing, realizing that, at least 80% of our pharmaceuticals and vaccines are manufactured in China, I think the American people are going, wait a minute, maybe we do need to step back and take a look at this, Jill.
Absolutely, you're darn right. So, I think we've got the right president that's not afraid to do what's necessary to bring stuff back to the U.S. and give us control over that again. So we're energy independent. Let's get pharmaceutical independent. Let's get medical supply independent. The essential stuff. I think we need that, and I think we can be on our way. I think we are. We're well on our way. In a lot of ways. So. I think it's already jump-started that routine, so that's wonderful. There's one other thing I wanted to bring up about how the WHO affects our daily lives, and we don't even know it.
Okay.
Is that okay? Can we change over to that?
So let's do.
The WHO, and I can't remember what year it was, probably in the 70s, I suppose, came up with ICD codes, which is like a disease, a code for... they started out saying, we want to find out what people in the world are dying of, what's causing their death. That was the initial purpose of what we call the ICD codes. And that's ICD codes are used every time you go to the doctor. They have a code. It's like a 5-6-digit code that they put on a little charge slip for you. Sometimes you see it, sometimes you don't. But I think most people understand that there's this code thing that exists. This started with the WHO and was made, you know, it started for a good reason. Let's find out what's causing people to die around the world. Okay, yeah, that sounds good. Now, under Obama, they came out with the 10th version of the ICD codes. The number of codes went from 15,000 to 20,000 codes to 145,000 codes. Ridiculous. We have to use, in every physician's office has to use that code and then combine that with a payment code. So the ICD code is the diagnostic code, and then that code has to coordinate with a code that you're using to charge the money for and to get paid for what you just did. So if the disease code doesn't match the charge code, then or the charge, you know, the charge code amount, then you don't get paid. If there's even a decimal place in the wrong spot, you don't get paid, period. This coding system accounts for between 5 and 40% of the overhead in every physician's office. They're adding codes. They're changing codes. They're changing the way they reimburse for codes. They're changing the requirements for how you get paid for something. Every doctor's office has at least one, usually two full-time people whose only job it is to do coding and billing based on these numbers. This is all controlled by the World Health Organization. They came up with this ICD-10, and honestly, the ICD-10 coding is crazy, and I did some commentaries on it years ago. But for example, they'll have a code for something like tripped over dog. I mean, literally like hand injury or attacked by a chicken, attacked by a turkey. And then have designations for right or left arm. I mean, it's insane, absolutely nuts. And it's data collection. It's absolute insanity. And I don't know where they. I mean, obviously it's data mining, data collection stuff. What are you going to do with that? So somebody got injured by a chicken in their right arm. Wow. What are you going to do with that? Why does it matter for me to get paid for taking care of you?
Well, sometimes it's minutia,
medical data.
Yeah, sometimes the minutia can be expensive. So, you know, we talk about the cost of health care. My gosh, we could reduce this from up to 40% just by changing these codes. So instead of all of this, you know, tripping over a dog or whatever, it could just be accident. Yeah. But the other thing is that you could actually, with all this data collection, that then they could start to ration care if we move to universal health care and say somebody has hypertension. And so their doctor says you need to do this, this, and this. And I think we all know that people don't always do everything that the doctor says. And so, of course, with watching people this more and more surveillance, then you might have health care that would not be approved for you because you haven't done X, X, and X. But yet we've also seen with this COVID-19 Wuhan virus thing that politicians, bureaucrats, and interest parties they will use their power to pick winners and losers. So this is an essential business. This isn't an essential business. Could it get to a point where this is an essential person? This isn't an essential person. I mean, I think if we continue on down this road, we could get there, Jill.
Well, I think, okay, let's put it real immediate situation. So we've got COVID-19. What are they doing? They're putting as many deaths and illnesses attributing as many deaths and illnesses to COVID-19 as possible. Why? To control the population is part of it. To say we got a lockdown because we've got all these deaths and all this. stuff. They've been doing it with influenza for years. We have to have a vaccine. Everybody has to have a vaccine because we had this many cases. Well, you had this many cases, and you're saying this many deaths, but most of those deaths weren't necessarily caused by COVID-19. The patient just happened to have COVID-19 or may have, or they had contact with somebody who had COVID-19, and you're now ascribing their death to COVID-19 based on your data collection and your little codes. Because what did they do right away? COVID-19 comes up, they issued a code for it. They issued an ICD code for COVID-19. So now they use that data. And let's say a whole bunch of people in Africa were injured by a chicken in their right arm, right? Let's go out there. What could they maybe do? Oh, you're not allowed to have chickens anymore. The government needs to take over the chicken business because too many people are coming in and using health care because of chicken injuries. Do you see what I mean?
I do.
The only reason you collect the data is so you can use it for control or money. It's always power, control, money. Always.
Well, one of my friends said data is the new oil, and I think you are certainly uncovering that. Jill, we're just about out of time. What would you like to say in conclusion to this particular podcast? I know we're going to do some more. What is the thing that you want people to know from this podcast?
You know, how do I put this? When our founders wrote the Constitution, they mentioned many times that the key to success for our country or any country that wanted to try democracy was that people paid attention to who was in power and held them responsible, and it depended on us electing moral leaders. It's the same way with this. The UN and the WHO are being run by a group of corrupt thugs. They put each other in office. They reap unbelievable benefits personally and financially from their affiliations and their positions. They're wasting our money. And this is a large amount of it is our money as private citizens and as taxpayers. And their goals are not in the best interest of the United States. Regardless of the COVID-19 thing, we should have been considering this a long time ago. And I think Trump actually did decrease the funding to WHO by like 40% or something last year. I think he did. Or at least he was talking about decreasing it. So, and that's, which is the right decision, in my opinion. Why are you giving money to somebody who's directly working against your best interest?
Right, who's
That's
trying
crazy.
To take you out at the knees.
And we're doing this with foreign aid all the time. So unless we have moral people in charge, and do you think the UN and WHO are suddenly, if they get rid of Tedros, do you think they're going to put a really great guy in there? Doubtful. They're going to put
doubtful.
The same kind of guy in, just a different name.
So one of the first ways to go at it is to start to choke off the money. And Trump did that this last week. And, of course, they're howling like wolves on that. But it was a good move. So, Dr. Jill Vecchio, we're going to do some more of these podcasts. They're very important. Your research on these important issues and the way you're bringing them forward is so important, helps people really think about them. So, Dr. Jill Vecchio, thank you.
Thank you, Kim, for doing these things. Wonderful.
You bet. And so this is Sounding Off with Kim Munson, and be sure and look for our next podcast.